All glories to Sri Prabhupada. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Our source started on 15, it's not there. Source started on 15, it's not there.
Yeah, all the way to
all of us. Okay, well, we can do these purports and fill the time. Yes. Our man flute. Where's two right there? McHale's Navy, F Troop, McHale's Navy, F Troop. What else is there? Is that one car 54, where are you? Okay, on page 6, then in the Parishishtam, then, you know, points of, you know, major points, very important points that come out that aren't in the, specifically the flow of the main topic, like that. Second purport. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is ad infinitum, more powerful than the most powerful sun of our experience. Millions and billions of suns are created by him and annihilated by him within his one breathing period. In the material world, the sun is considered to be the source of all productivity and material energy, and only due to the sun can we have the necessities of life. Therefore, during the personal presence of the Lord on the earth, all paraphernalia for our peace and prosperity, especially religion and knowledge, were in full display because of the Lord's presence. Just as there is a full flood of light in the presence of the glowing sun. Maharaj Yudhishthira observed some discrepancies in his kingdom, and therefore he became very anxious about Arjuna, who was long absent, and there was also no news about Dwarka's well-being. He suspected the disappearance of Lord Krishna, otherwise there would have been no possibility of fearful omens. So everything is based on Krishna. Here, say that. So notice here, it's the interesting is knowledge and religion, says especially, are fully manifest when he's there. So he's being compared to the sun, which provides all, necessities, all prosperity, all productivity is all coming from the sun. So Krishna's compared like that. So, but the point that's being brought out here is knowledge and religion. Does that make some sense? You know what I'm saying? Krishna's here, everything is productive, everything is progressive. So many qualities could have been mentioned, but what's mentioned is knowledge and religion. Does that make sense? So that's what's most important out of all the qualities that could be manifest, because religion creates a social structure on which you can function. Right? How you're going to interact, how you're going to maintain the whole culture so that you can be absorbed. Does that make sense? Right? And knowledge is, without knowledge, then you stay in the material world. If you perform the Vedic activities or religion with knowledge, you're liberated. You get out of the material world. So the full, display of the religion in which you can properly perform human activities, and the knowledge by which you could then even go beyond the human activities to the transcendence, that's important. Does that make sense? In other words, for us, this is what the Bhagavatam is giving us. From Dharma comes Artha and Kama, automatically. But we're not interested. They come automatically. Does that make sense? It just happens. What we're interested in is the bhakti, right? So religion is the situation in which the conditioned soul has to function within. You're going to create a religion, right? It means everybody follows a religion. Some are recognized as, you know, world religions, and some are not. Does that make sense? You know, the kids on the block, they create their own religion. You know, how you talk, how you walk, how you dress, how you interact, what's valuable, what's not valuable, their method of economics, their method of social structure, their punishment, their gain, everything. You go see that's complete. Whatever you would get from a religious process, they have created on their own. It's a religion. Right? Maybe quite temporary, but it's there. Does that make sense? So the living entity can't function without it. So that's there. So Bhagavatam, therefore, is anything that's cheating means it's just going to take you from Dharma into Artha and Kama. That's thrown out. But what's going to take you towards Bhakti, but between Bhakti and Dharma, is knowledge, right? Is moksha. Does that make sense? So therefore, this indicates the path. Dharma, moksha, bhakti. Not dharma, artha, kama. You understand? Right? Because people are following dharma, so they get artha, and with artha, then they'll enjoy kama. So that's actually their goal. But for us, it's dharma, moksha, bhakti. Right? So this is very significant that it says, especially religion and knowledge. That means the culture is progressive. It's going up. It's not going down. In it, you see it's the most opulent and the most facility for enjoying the facility is there. But that's a side thing. Right? The residents of Vrindavan, it's unlimitedly more opulent than Vaikuntha. But they don't care. They're only interested in serving Krishna. Right? Vaikuntha is made out of all unlimited jewels and gold. Its opulence is amazing. It can't be described. But that is all coming from the Chintamani, which is just the dust of Vrindavan. That dust that just is there on the ground that the cows kick up when they come home in the evening and covers you from head to foot. That's what creates the opulence of Vaikuntha. But because nobody cares about it, it doesn't manifest. It's just dust. But the opulence is there, is great. It's mentioned in the walls, like in Nanda Maharaj's place or in Radharani's place. They have, it means out of a solid piece of emerald, the size of a parrot is carved, a parrot that's so perfect that the parrots think they're real. And so the parrots come up there and perch next to them and talk to them and this and that and find them a little, you know, how you say,
standoffish.
Yes, yeah, standoffish and not so. So they'll go try their luck elsewhere. But it's just there for fun because it's fun to see parrots thinking that the, you know, imitation parrot is real. That's all the more it's valuable. It's not that, wow, a solid emerald parrot, you know, like that, you know. No, it's just a matter of it's funny that the parrot thinks it's a real parrot. That's all. You know, the cow sheds are done in... I think the columns, you know, the pillars, because, you know, generally it's red, you know, from brick, because you don't do anything too fancy in the cow shed. You know, you don't plaster it this side. You just build brick. It's done with rubies. And the roof, I think, is done in emeralds. It's just emerald shingles. And then, I'm not sure, lapis lazuli is in there, unless lapis lazuli is the columns. Like that, Vaidurya stone, like that. So it means in Vaikuntha, it's the airplanes are made out of lapis lazuli, right? Wow, they fly around in airplanes. In Vrindavan, it's used to build goshalas. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Is what it'll be thought is that you have let they have more, but that's only because they don't care about it. The more you care about it, the less you get, right? The less you care about, the more you get. Does that make sense? So that's the way it works. So then here, so that's one thing that's being brought out. So when Krishna's present, the advantage is because religion and knowledge are in such display that it's very easy to take up Krishna consciousness and absorb yourself in bhakti. All facility, all understanding, everything's there. Right? Another main point is about the sun is the necessities of life. Everything's based off the sun. But it's understood from the acharyas that the sun actually is, that it's the Krishna's energy, but actually the Krishna's energy, it's actually coming from Radharani. So that potency of the sun, that brightness of the sun, why it's inspiring, makes everything happen, because it's actually just a drop of Radharani's energy. So that means it's the devotional energy that's actually what's inspiring. You know, so you can't get away from Radha and Krishna. Try, but it's not going to work. Yeah, please.
Yeah. This is very interesting. From the purport of verse 4, Srila Prabhupada, this is an excerpt, Srila Prabhupada writes that in the conditioned state, the living being is not satisfied even if he actually becomes the Lord of all that he surveys, which he never becomes. And therefore, he becomes the victim of all kinds of cheating, even with his nearest and most intimate relations. In such an unsatisfactory state of affairs, there is no harmony, even between father and son, or between husband and wife. But all these contending difficulties can be mitigated by one process, and that is the devotional service of the Lord. The world of hypocrisy can be checked only by counteraction through devotional service to the Lord and nothing else. So this first sentence is very interesting, because what it means, or Prabhupada writes, in the conditioned state, the living being is not satisfied even if he actually becomes the Lord of all he surveys, which he never becomes. So Prabhupada is pointing out that the living entity is cheating himself. And then he goes on to say, and therefore he becomes the victim of all kinds of cheating, even with his nearest and most intimate relations. So, the Bhagavatam also, there's a verse which states that one of the conditions for the living entity turning away from his spiritual nature and taking shelter of Maya is self-enviousness or self-hatred. In other words, as spirit soul, he's part and parcel of Krishna. So he's envious of Krishna, means that he wants to be, as this sentence says, Lord of all that he surveys. He wants to be the Lord himself, so he's necessarily envious of Krishna. But because he's part and parcel of Krishna, so he's also envious of himself. He's envious of his own spiritual qualities. He's envious that he's eternal, that he's full of knowledge, that he's full of bliss. Because all of that, well, in one sense, it's the ideal of what we want. But at the same time, it's indicating the reality of our identity. That we are eternal associates, eternal servants of Krishna. And so he's become envious of Krishna, so therefore he's envious of himself. Therefore he's cheating himself by coming to this material world and accepting Maya's offer that, yes, you can become the Lord of all you survey. So that's very rarely achieved by anyone. I mean, the world is full of the hundreds and millions, billions of people out there in the material world right now who are following some dream of becoming wealthy, famous, whatever. And very, very few of them, because it's all a matter of their karma, are going to achieve anything like that. Certainly on the world stage, very few are going to become world famous. Some might become well known in their neighborhood for something, in their block, or, in their city, even more rarely, or even much more rarely in their state or their country, and very, very rarely in the world. So mostly, this is how they cheat themselves, by following some kind of dream like that to improve their situation. But even if their situation does improve by the laws of karma, even if they do rise to the top, then, as Prabhupada points out, they never become the Lord of all they survey. Because they're still not in control of anything. It's just their karma. It's just karma has made this arrangement for them. And for some time, their name will be in lights, people will be talking about them, they'll be on the cover of all the magazines for some time. And then they'll be forgotten. Everyone will say, oh yeah, there was one famous actress. She said the progression of my career went like this. I think it was, I've forgotten her name, well-known actress from the golden days of Hollywood, like, No, even before Betty Davis or someone like that. So let's say it was Betty Davis. I don't know if it was her who said this, but someone like that who said, the first reaction when you come to Hollywood is, who's Betty Davis? And then the next one is that, oh, Betty Davis. Oh yeah, she was in this little part. Yeah, she's interesting. Let's get her for this next more important part. And then the third stage is, everyone's talking about Betty Davis. And then the fourth stage is, they start saying, we need a new actress who's like Betty Davis. And then the fifth stage is, who's Betty Davis? So this is karma, you see. Everything's predestined. So if you get up there, it's because of the modes of nature have put you up there. It's all mechanical. You'll be up there for a certain time, and then everyone will forget about you. And then based on that cheating, our cheating of ourselves, surrendering ourselves to material nature for this illusion of being the Lord, which we never are, at any moment, then around us, all the relationships around us are simply cheating. Like I remember Prabhupada used to speak of Shah Jahan. Shah Jahan built the famous Taj Mahal, and he had a number of sons, of whom the youngest was Aurangzeb. So Aurangzeb a pretty evil type of character, very, very ambitious and ruthless. So he kind of climbed over the older sons to become the successor to the throne. And he put his own father, because of course there is a law of succession of kings that the oldest, the oldest prince should become the next king. And so the father, Shah Jahan, certainly wasn't going along with Aurangzeb's plans. So Aurangzeb had him imprisoned. And Prabhupada pointed out how one playwright, I guess it was a famous Bengali playwright, wrote a whole play about this. And one thing he said was that everyone was wondering, this was to illustrate why you have to go to the author of anything, even the Vedas. If you want to know what is the meaning of the Vedas, you have to hear from Srila Vyasadeva. And Srila Vyasadeva therefore has presented Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want to know what the Vedas, what Vedanta Sutra is really saying, read Srimad Bhagavatam, because that's Srila Vyasadeva's own commentary. So similarly, everyone was wondering why this playwright wrote a play called Shah Jahan, when Shah Jahan, that figure, was simply in prison. And it was his son, the youngest son, Aurangzeb, who was doing all the action. And so the play was following Aurangzeb, all the terrible things he was doing. And so the playwright himself answered, because the point of my play was to show the pitiable situation of Shah Jahan being locked up in prison and then receiving all this news of how, you know, his family was being annihilated. Actually, at one stage, Aurangzeb, he came to his father's cell bringing a big jewel-encrusted box and said, Father, I have a present for you. And he laid the present down before his father. So his father was becoming a little inspired that, oh, maybe my son is changing. Now he seems to be wanting to do some service for me. Maybe now he'll listen to reason. So very excitedly, he opened the box and found the head of his oldest son in the box, You see, the heir apparent, the prince that was supposed to become the king. Aurangzeb delivered his head in a jewel-encrusted box as a present. So this illustrates what Prabhupada is talking here, how the nearest and dearest, even between father and son, or between husband and wife, there are all kinds of unsatisfactory states of affairs. So this is going on. This is famous. Going back to Hollywood, there was a woman who became a big star in the days of the silent movies, because that was a big revolution. First they had silent films, and they had their stars from that period, and then in the late 20s, then films with soundtrack came in. So that was a big revolution, because so many of these stars from the silent era, when they would talk, it would sound ridiculous. They would look very like a beautiful starlet or a very handsome actor. But when he would talk like this. It would sound completely ridiculous. So they had to now pick stars who not only looked good, but sounded good. So then overnight, all of these famous silent star films, most of them, were immediately forgotten, you see. So one woman who had been a silent screen actress, then she had made her money from her film roles in that period of time, so she could continue to live in Beverly Hills. But she was so mortified that she lost her career. You know, overnight she was just nobody, no more phone calls, you know. No more scripts being written for her. Her agent had nothing more for her to do. All her fan base evaporated. No one knew who she was. So she became embittered, and she was living in a big Beverly Hills mansion. And she became a recluse. She would never meet anyone. She would never even go to the door. She would always have some servant or someone go to the door to answer if anyone was coming. And finally, she became so reclusive that she just had one gardener who would come and just do the grounds. And she wouldn't even allow anyone, servants, nobody inside. The only companion she had was her dog, one of those little, you know, fluffy dogs. So then the gardener, he was coming and doing his duty, but he began to notice that the newspapers were piling up on the steps day after day, week after week, and letters and so on. There was all kinds of mail piled up on the steps. She wasn't even taking her mail. And so he became doubtful, so he finally called the police. And the police broke down the door, and there was a horrible smell inside the mansion. And they found the body of this former star laying in bed. So I don't know if she'd killed herself, taken poison, or just died naturally. But anyway, she had been dead for several weeks. But the little doggy was still alive. And guess what the little doggy had been eating for those weeks? The body of the lady. So there were all these bite marks in her flesh because the dog had nothing else to eat, so he was just chewing on her. So that's like the final example of what Prabhupada is talking about here. How even the nearest and dearest, in the end, they become the source of cheating and misery. So this is the state of affairs in the material world. Because, why? Because the spirit soul starts off with this deliberate intention to cheat himself. By becoming a hater of Krishna, rejecting Krishna, then he rejects his own eternal spiritual identity and relationship with Krishna. And he wants to become material. He wants to embrace the material identity. And so in this way he cheats himself and becomes then a target for so much cheating. So many other cheaters who will gather around him. So it's a very interesting...
So one
comes up is that this tendency of the living entity that when things go wrong for them and they feel I'm useless or this or that, and they start to dislike themselves, then that's only a furtherance of the original, you know, taking themselves away from Krishna.
Right.
Because it's, they want to be God, so they hate that they're servant. Or, but in the material thing, you want to be great and famous and this and that, and you're not, you know, so therefore you hate yourself. So then you take yourself further into ignorance. Because it's a thing in mana where it says a Brahmin should never berate themselves for past failure. You should just see, you know, what needs to be done, what went wrong, correct that, and move forward. Because otherwise it just creates, I can see, because otherwise it's taking you into material energy instead of out.
Yeah, should just one always lament.
Laments, yeah.
Always lamenting
it. Yeah.
His position.
In other words, we have no one to blame but ourselves. But we shouldn't blame ourselves.
Yeah, you shouldn't blame yourself. No one to blame but yourself, but don't blame yourself. You can't take pleasure in blaming yourself. Okay. Ninth purport. Material prosperity consists of a good wife, good home, sufficient land, good children, aristocratic family relations, victory over competitors, and by pious work. Huh? Oh, and by pious work, attainment of accommodations in the higher celestial planets for better facilities and material amenities. These facilities are earned not only by one's hard manual labor or by unfair means, but by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Prosperity earned by one's personal endeavor also depends on the mercy of the Lord. Personal labor must be there in addition to the Lord's benediction. But without the Lord's benediction, no one is simply successful simply by personal labor. The modernized man of Kali Yuga believes in personal endeavor and denies the benediction of the Supreme Lord. Even a great sannyasi of India delivers speeches in Chicago. I wonder who that would be. Protesting the benedictions of the Supreme Lord. But as far as Vedic Shastras are concerned, as we find in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate sanction for all success rests in the hands of the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Yudhishthira admits this truth in his personal success, and it behooves one to follow in the footsteps of a great king and devotee of the Lord to make life a full success. If one could achieve success without the sanction of the Lord, then no medical practitioner would fail to cure a patient. Despite the most advanced treatment of a suffering patient by the most up-to-date medical practitioner, there is death. And even in the most hopeless case, without medical treatment, a patient is cured astonishingly. Therefore, the conclusion is that God's sanction is the immediate cause for all happenings, good or bad. Any successful man should feel grateful to the Lord for all he has achieved. So here it's mentioned what is material, and this is in relation to Yudhishthira Maharaj's appreciating that by Krishna's grace, then they got all these facilities here. Good wife, good home, sufficient land, good children, aristocratic family relations, victory over competitors. He was like that. So he's seeing the Lord's hand in it. So the conditioned nature, this is what one is looking for. So that is only coming by Krishna's grace. So one has to turn to Krishna for these things. Otherwise, then the tendency is, oh, it's Maya, I don't turn to Krishna. But then it's also, you're leaving Krishna out of the picture. It's think, thought, it's more Krishna conscious to avoid dealing with these things, but I will deal anyway, but I will make it that it's not Maya, as I will just neglect it or leave it out of the sight. At the same time, as if I work it into Krishna consciousness, I have to acknowledge that it's my attachments, my need. So if I don't work it into my Krishna consciousness, I kind of like keep it on the side, then it's somehow another thought that I'm not in Maya. Or you're dealing on the side, is this practical? Does that make sense? So it's an interesting trick, just like Maharaj is saying about the self-hatred is actually how you can come into the material world. You hate that I'm not God. Right? Does that make sense? So, but it looks it's the opposite. So in the same way, it looks that we're being very Krishna conscious by avoiding it, but at the same time we're not avoiding it, we're doing it, but we're just leaving Krishna out of it. Does that make sense? So here Yudhishthira Maharaj acknowledges, yes, I have these, you know, these material needs, and I am fulfilling them through Krishna's instruction by Krishna's grace. And I will therefore engage them in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So that's self-realization. You recognize what is this actual spiritual direction, and you recognize actually what's the material. And you balance them and connect them to the Lord. Does this make some sense? Go ahead, next one. 28, 29. Sri Balaram, no, Sri Rama, or Balaram, is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. Baladev acts as the spiritual master of all devotees, and by his causeless mercy, the fallen souls are delivered. Sri Baladev appeared as Sri Nityananda Prabhu during the advent of Lord Chaitanya. And the great Lord Nityananda Prabhu exhibited his causeless mercy by delivering a pair of extremely fallen souls named Jagai and Madhai. Therefore, it is particularly mentioned herein that Balaram is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. By his divine grace only one can approach the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And thus, Sri Balaram is the mercy incarnation of the Lord, manifested as the spiritual master, the savior of the pure devotees. So it's by the grace of Balaram, then you're able to get Krishna. Right? Because it's only by mercy that you get. Krishna will reciprocate as you surrender. So Balaram, his thing is creating that surrender. Right? So he's the guru. Guru gives you instructions how to surrender. So that's the principle. Right? Does that make sense? So Balaram's always the guru. Like that. Does that make sense? And by his grace, then you are able to actually follow the instructions of Guru and therefore obtain the mercy of Krishna. Does that make some sense? Like that. So he says he protects the devotee. So protects means keeping one in devotional line, in the devotional understanding, in the devotional practice. You have a question? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah? Okay. Okay. 33rd purport. The jiva tattvas are infinitesimal potential particles of the Lord, and therefore they require the protection of the Lord at all times. And to the eternal servitors of the Lord is pleased to give all protection at all times. The liberated souls never, therefore, think themselves as free as the Lord or as powerful as the Lord, but they always seek the protection of the Lord in all circumstances, both in the material world and the spiritual world. This dependence of the liberated soul is constitutional. For the liberated souls are like sparks of a fire that are able to exhibit the glow of fire along with the fire and not independently. Independently, the glow of the sparks is extinguished, although the quality of fire or the glowing is there. Thus, those who give up the protection of the Lord and become so-called lords themselves out of spiritual ignorance come back again to this material world even after prolonged tapasya of the Sephiris type. That is the verdict of all Vedic literature. So the jiva means can't function without Krishna. But the tendency is he wants to, because he has independence, he wants to try to function without Krishna, but he can't. They're so small, they can't maintain themselves. Right? So Krishna is actually the maintainer. So if that's recognized, then everything becomes successful. Because then it's saying the liberated souls are able to manifest that glow of the spark along with the fire. But if you leave the fire, then the spark goes out. Right? That's the principle. So the Lord always protects, but that means then he is protecting, but it's also that protection for us the perception of it is enhanced if we surrender to the Lord. Right? The Lord's always taking care of us. But the point is what is taking care, we may differ in opinion than God. Right? Just like the child may differ in opinion about what is being taken care of than the mother. The kid thinks going out playing all day outside in the rain and wind and this and that, having a great time, and then coming down and being deathly ill, they still want to go back out and play. But the mother wants them to recuperate, so her, you know, restriction on, you know, their activity is seen by the child as unfavorable. Right? But it's always favorable. Does that make sense? So the same way as a living entity may think it's unfavorable, but it's always favorable. Because Krishna's always protecting. But now if you recognize Krishna's position as the protector, right, then you're able to perceive that protection. And then that relationship between oneself and Krishna that is enhanced, and that gives inspiration. Right? Because then you know you're not in this alone. Does that make sense? Yes, no? Yeah.
Okay. Where are we?
34.
The Lord is the protector of cows and the Brahminical culture. A society devoid of cow protection and Brahminical culture is not under the direct protection of the Lord. Just as the prisoners in the jails are not under the protection of the king, but under the protection of a severe agent of the king. Without cow protection and cultivation of the Brahminical qualities in human society, at least for a section of the members of society, no human civilization can prosper at any length. By Brahminical culture, the development of the dormant qualities of goodness, namely truthfulness, equanimity, sense control, forbearance, simplicity, general knowledge, transcendental knowledge, and firm faith in the Vedic wisdom, one can become a Brahmana and thus see the Lord as He is. And after surpassing the Brahminical perfection, one has to become a devotee of the Lord, so that His loving affection in the form of proprietor, master, friend, son, and lover can be transcendentally achieved. The stage of a devotee which attracts the transcendental affection of the Lord does not develop unless one has developed the qualities of a Brahmana, as above mentioned. The Lord is inclined to a Brahmana of quality and not of false prestige. Those who are less than a Brahmana by qualification cannot establish any relation with the Lord, just as fire cannot be kindled from the raw earth unless there is wood, although there is a relation between the wood and the earth. Since the Lord is all perfect in Himself, there could not be any question of His welfare. And Maharaj Yudhisthira refrained from asking this question. He simply inquired about His residential place, Dwarkapuri, where pious men assemble. The Lord stays only where pious men assemble and takes pleasure in their glorifying the Supreme Truth. Maharaj Yudhisthira was anxious to know about the pious men and their pious acts in the city of Dwarka. So this is a very, actually, scientific justification or foundational explanation of Varnashram Dharma, Brahminical culture or Vedic culture, and then Vaishnav culture as being a progression of spiritual advancement. So, Srila Prabhupada says very clearly that those who are less than a Brahmana by qualification cannot establish any relation with the Lord. And in the context of this entire purport, those less than a Brahmana, that goes together with this sentence, without cow protection and cultivation of the Brahminical qualities in human society, at least for a section of the members of society, no human civilization can prosper at any length. So, in the Daivi Varnashram system, which is, as Srila Prabhupada makes very clear, is not based on the bodily conception of belonging to a particular caste, but rather is a social system based on culture. Culture actually as a verb, because there's culture as a noun, but there's culture as a verb. Culture meaning to cultivate. So in Daivi Varnashram system, Brahminical qualities are being actively cultivated. There are spiritual masters who are active in their preaching. They're looking through society from top to bottom. Who can I train in? Who can I educate in spiritual knowledge? And because they're not looking in this with this view to the bodily conception, but they're looking at the living entity himself, so they're seeing, oh, here's someone, superficially they're coming from Shudra background or Vaishya background or whatever it may be, but this Prabhupada used to say, look for the spark. It's like Prabhupada compared the people of Kali Yuga to a burnt out fireplace. See? Mainly there's ashes, but if you sift through the ashes, if someone is really interested, you see, in saving what's there, they won't just look at the pile of ashes and say, oh, it's useless, but they'll sift through the ashes and they'll see, oh, here are some still burning embers. So this is the way the great spiritual masters of old, like Narada Muni, travel. Why is he traveling everywhere? Because he's looking for people whom he can preach to. And he'll try anyone. He even tried Prajapati Daksha, who was really so much covered by false ego, he could not appreciate Narada's instructions. But Narada was trying. You see, this is the vision of the preacher. Let me try. So in this way, he finds even in a pile of ashes, some still burning embers. And then Prabhupada said, fan those embers and add some fuel and you'll have a fire again. The Brahminical qualities will come out. So this is the meaning of Brahminical culture in Daivi Varnashram Dharma. It's not simply that there's a caste of people known as Brahmanas and their qualifications that they were born into certain families and therefore, all right, we don't have to inquire further beyond that. We just look at the last, you know, the family name and we know here we have Brahmanas. That's not necessarily true at all. Ashvatthama was the son of a great Brahmana, but we see by his activities, and therefore he's addressed as Brahma Bandhu. His activities were abominable. Krishna wanted him to be killed. Krishna, we've already seen that in our study of the first canto. Krishna wanted Ashvatthama to be killed. But then others of the Pandavas were saying, no, no. So then Krishna, by hints, he indicated how he could be insulted in such a way that he was as good as dead in human society. So anyway, that's no guarantee. Prabhupada said it may be a qualification, a preliminary qualification to be born in Brahmin family. It may help, because then the atmosphere is there for the proper cultivation. But it is certainly not the only qualification. And someone who is not born in Brahmana family may still, by association with a great soul, a great preacher, that ember of Brahminical qualification, because ultimately everyone is spirit soul, can be fanned. And there's the famous incident even given in the Upanishads of Jabala Satyakam, who is the son of Gautama. Gautama decided, because he is truthful, he honestly told me that he doesn't know who his father is, but even his mother, who had relations with different men, was not sure who his father was. But he was not ashamed to tell that to me, so he must be a Brahmana. So we accepted him as a disciple. So this is Daivi Varnashram culture. And as Prabhupada points out, there must be protection of brahmanas, those of brahminical quality, and there must be protection of cows in such a culture. Then you get real brahmanas, and Prabhupada defines a real brahmana as... This is a very nice purport, because Prabhupada is giving such straightforward definitions. That the real brahmana... Then, what does he say? One can become a brahmana and thus see the Lord as He is. In other words, through the eye of knowledge, through the eye of brahmana jnana. Brahma jnana iti brahmani... what is it? Brahma jnana iti brahmana. So... And Brahma Gyan means to see the Lord as He is. To have that eye of the Brahmana. So, they know who the Lord is. And then, when so knowing, they take up the activities that please the Lord. Then, they become devotees of the Lord. They become actually associates of the Lord. And it is stated here, that Maharaj Yudhisthira didn't even bother to ask about the welfare of the Lord because he's knowing who the Lord is. But he was asking about his residential place, Dwarkapura Puri, where pious men assemble. That means brahmanas and devotees of the Lord. The Lord stays only where pious men assemble and take pleasure in their glorification of the Supreme Truth. And so these pious men, they're known as sadhus, saintly persons. And actually, Lord Narayan tells Durvasa Muni, when Durvasa Muni came all the way to Vaikuntha, being pursued by Sudarshan Chakra, and he fell down at the lotus feet of the Lord of Vaikuntha, Mahanarayan, and begged him, please give me protection. The Lord said, I'm sorry. Actually, even I can't save you. You have to go to Maharaj Ambarish, whom you offended, and beg his, get his forgiveness. And then Sudarshana Chakra will leave you alone. And the Lord, he recites these verses at this point, where he says, I'm like a sold-out animal for my devotees. I'm like the pet of the sadhus, of the saintly persons, of the devotees. They can lead me wherever they want. That is the mystery why the Lord takes the form as the deity. He takes the form as a deity. That means he places himself, so to speak, in a helpless position. He doesn't even move. But he's fully dependent upon the service of his devotees. So he willingly... That's why only a pure devotee of the Lord can install the deity. Because the Lord will only take that position of complete dependence upon the service of His devotees at the request of a pure devotee of the Lord. And the Lord also tells Durvasa Muni that without the association of such saintly persons, then I don't care to remain in Vaikuntha. Dwarka is Vaikuntha. It's the Vaikuntha of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna has, of course, his own home base, Vrindavan, but he also has his Vaikuntha, the place where he, as Krishna, enjoys opulence and enjoys being a king, and that is Dwarkapuri. So Lord Mahanarayan, who is an expansion of that Dwarakesh. He says, I do not care to stay in Vaikuntha. I do not even care to be with Goddess Lakshmi, Goddess Shri, unless my devotees are there. So if my devotees would leave this place, I wouldn't stay either. Then Vaikuntha would just become an empty, soulless place of great opulence, but no one would be there. Krishna would go wherever his devotees are. So he made this point to say, I have no independent say in this matter. You have offended my devotee, a great saintly person, a great sadhu, a great Mahabhagavata, Maharaj Ambarish. So you have to get his forgiveness, not mine. I can't help you.
In the Varnashram system, when it's being described by Manu, that there is not a separate system of ashram described for the Varnas. It's the Brahminical culture. It's described as the Brahminical culture. This is the life of a Brahmin. Brahmacharya Grihastha Vanaprastha. This is Brahminical life. It doesn't explain something separate. There isn't one for Kshatriyas, one for Vaishyas. That's what there is. So that's what it strikes me in this verse, is that even in the Vedic culture, everyone follows Brahminical culture, even though occupationally they may not be a Brahmin. But culture-wise, and as far as character and everything, they got all exactly the same standards to follow. It's not different. That's very significant. I mean, this purport then explains why that is. Because otherwise you'd think, because you sometimes hear in Kshatriya culture, this or that. That's because of the occupation. Then elements of the Brahminical culture become more prominent. You know, for the Brahmin, it's truth. But truth meaning is scripture, according to the scripture, according to enlightenment, upliftment. So for Kshatriya, truth means I said it, it must happen. Because of their passion. It's the same principle, but it takes on the flavor of that, but it's not something other than Brahminical culture. But unless that is connected to Krishna, then that won't get you Krishna either. You know, because Prabhupada's saying here, Prabhupada's only going to look at somebody who's has Brahminical qualities. That's where it starts. You know, just like consciousness, in perception. That the five levels of perception, that at the fourth level, which is